Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today, a special on-air exclusive Back to School on the Markets with Jeffrey Gundlach, the Chief Executive Officer, Chief Investment Officer, and founder of DoubleLine Capital. This conversation has become an annual tradition here on UBS Market Moves. Now, today's special conversation will cover a lot of ground across a wide range of timely macro topics that have been moving markets. This accounts for perspectives on the upcoming U.S. election, along with the course for the Fed's monetary policy, and we will spend some time covering positioning guidance across multiple asset classes. Though before we get started with our conversation, some background on our special guest. As mentioned, Jeffrey is the CEO, CIO, and founder of DoubleLine Capital. Jeffrey is recognized as an expert in bonds and other debt-related investments. In 2011, he appeared on the cover of Barron's as the new bond king. In 2012, Bloomberg Markets magazine named him as one of the 50 most influential. In 2013, Jeffrey was named Money Manager of the Year. In 2015, Bloomberg Markets magazine again named Jeffrey as one of the 50 most influential. Jeffrey is a graduate of Dartmouth College, summa cum laude, with degrees in mathematics and philosophy. So, Jeffrey, with that, it's great to be with you here today. Thank you for dropping by Market Moves to spend some time with our listeners and our clients, and do look forward to hearing your thinking on a wide range of topics that we will cover today with our listeners.
Very good. Nice to be here again.
So, Jeffrey, perhaps we can begin with the U.S. economy, the state of the economy as it stands today, as we're roughly a week out from the Fed having cut interest rates by 50 basis points, the first cut in 4 years. With that backdrop, what is your expectation for the trajectory of the U.S. economy? There has been a lot of talk, debate over the prospects for a soft landing. So, over the near term, how do you see economic conditions here in the U.S. evolving?
I think the economy is demonstrably weakening. You see that the unemployment rate, the U3 unemployment rate, is rising in a way that's quite convincing. It's actually above its 36-month moving average, which is a very important indicator for us here at DoubleLine. We go on watch for weakening economy when the unemployment rate goes above its one-year moving average, the 12-month moving average. But when you get above the three-year moving average, the 36-month moving average, that has never failed to trigger a recession. And in fact, it's almost a bell ringing that you are at the doorstep of a recession. And there are other indicators that are very important and convincing in that same regard. One is the yield curve, the Treasury yield curve. And we focus on the spread between the 2-year Treasury yield and the 10-year Treasury yield. And that had been inverted for a long time, about 2 years, actually. And more recently, that now it is de-inverted, and it's doing it virtually every day at this point. The 2-10 spread was negative 108 basis points earlier this year. So it was negative by the 10-year was 108 basis points below the yield on the 2-year. And now it's at 20 basis points positive. And a lot of financial commentators get excited or nervous when they see the yield on the 10-year go below the yield on the 2-year. But it's that happening does not mean that you're imminently going to have economic weakness. It just means that you're on watch. But once the key is that when it de-inverts, and that has happened in a way that is now convincing, it's not vacillating back and forth, it's now 20 basis points positive, that is another one of these indicators that is highly suggestive of a recession. And then another one, which was just reported today, is consumer confidence. And if you look at consumer confidence, it's interesting how there's two different measures. There's one of expectations for the future, and then there's one that is the current conditions of confidence for the consumer. And it's interesting that the normal situation is consumers are nervous about the future. They almost always have low expectations for the future relative to the present situation. But once the present situation confidence starts to fall, you start to see the pattern of a recession coming, and that's happening. So we had expectations of the future were much worse than the evaluation of the present situation for the last 10 years. It's been that way. But now we're starting to see the view of the present situation deteriorating. And the pattern of the consumer confidence of the present situation looks eerily similar, I hate to say this, but looks eerily similar to the situation pre the global financial crisis. So we have to watch out for that. Finally, we have the employment situation on the supply-demand balance of labor, which Jay Powell talks about a lot. And he's quite correct in saying that the tremendous imbalance, there was so much demand for labor versus supply after the lockdown was in place, that that's been relaxing now for the past 2 years plus. And it's now right back to where it was pre-pandemic, which he likes. He's encouraged by that. And that's one of the reasons why the Fed can cut interest rates, is because there's this labor supply demand imbalance isn't so out of whack. But the problem is that I've been thinking about is that it's gone from tremendously out of balance with demand much more than supply, and now it's more in balance. But the trend has been relentless for the past 2.5 years. We've been seeing the increase in supply versus demand. And if that were to continue in line with the unemployment rate crossing its moving averages and the yield curve de-inverting and the leading economic indicators being negative now for a couple of years, it would seem that it's possible that the labor market will become more of a concern. And that's why the Fed has started cutting interest rates. They realize what these trends are. And I thought the most telling thing at last week's Fed meeting was that Jay Powell went off script briefly in his press conference Q&A, and he actually said there appears to be something artificial about the employment rate. He actually used the word artificial. And what he's talking about is that the establishment survey, which is the one that comes out the first Friday of every month, it keeps getting revised downward in the subsequent reports. So we get a lot of fanfare the first Friday of every month that, hey, big employment number again, and then they get revised down. In fact, for the most recent year, they were just revised down by 818,000 jobs. So almost a million jobs were revised out of existence. And when you look at the household survey, which is a different class of looking at employment data, the household survey is typically more accurate at economic turning points. And the household survey year to date has negative job growth cumulatively. So for 8 months, we have lost jobs on the household survey. So I think the Fed's starting to understand this. And plans on cutting interest rates, and the market has been extremely sensitive to the data on their view of the Fed. When we entered 2024, there were the expectation using the shape of the U.S. Treasury curve was that the Fed would cut rates 7 times in 2024. That looked kind of crazy once we just got into the later part of the first quarter, because before the CPI tends to have a spike early in the year. I don't think they do the seasonal adjustments very accurately, because the first quarter is almost always an inflation scare. And as we get later in the year, the CPI tends to be much lower than it is earlier in the year. So we went from 7 cuts expected, then we got the CPI scare, and all of a sudden by mid-year, the market was talking about maybe 1 cut only in 2024. And suddenly now we've had 225 cuts in one day last week at that. And now the bond market is pricing for another 200 basis points-ish, at least 175 basis points of further rate cuts within the next 12 months. So we've gone into a very different environment where the inflation does not seem to be the problem for the next 6 months, far from it. We actually think it's going to be below 2% on the headline CPI by the end of the first quarter's February report that comes out in March. The problem seems to be that we're getting more concerned about the trends in the labor force. So this has led to a pretty rapid change in the shape of the yield curve and the predictions of the future. And for now, it's been supportive because, you know, when the Fed starts cutting, usually – you don't have full-on recession fears, but you have a cheering risk market because they're glad that the Fed is cutting the base rate. And so that, you know, don't fight the Fed is the old saying. And so we've seen with the cut last week, we've seen new highs get printed on the equity markets, the standard indices, and we've seen spreads, which had widened on junk bonds and emerging market bonds, and even investment grade bonds, they've stopped widening and have settled back down. So we're in this moment of calm as the market digests that 50 basis point cut.
Here at UBS, tactically speaking, we are most preferred within fixed income on MBS as well as IG corporates. What are your current views on those subsectors?
Yes, I think the investment grade corporate bond market is not cheap. It certainly can't be described as being cheap, but it doesn't seem to have a lot of risk in it. The quality of the market is better now than it has been at many times through history. And corporate treasurers have been smart. They took advantage of very low rates. They pushed out maturities. There isn't a lot of maturity wall concerns anywhere in the corporate bond market. So investment grade corporate bonds seem to be a sensible place to be. The mortgage market was very, very cheap a few months ago, and it has rallied quite a lot. So we think that the agency mortgage market is attractive. We do not think that it's a screaming buy at this point because the spreads were, I mean, they got close to 200 basis points last year, and they settled in at about 150 basis points, and they've come in pretty significantly from there. But one of the things that supports the mortgage market is when the Fed goes to a more accommodating posture, you generally get lower volatility, at least initially, for a few quarters in the Treasury bond market. And the mortgage market is extremely sensitive to volatility. If you plot the move index on, you know, bond market Treasury volatility to mortgage spreads versus the Treasury market, it's an extraordinarily high correlation. So we have been of the belief that volatility was going to settle down. It has moderated, but we think it could come down further with this Fed pivot, and that should continue to favor agency mortgage-backed securities. Other sectors that are less conventional, like, say, emerging market debt has done quite well more recently, and that's, I think, has something to do with the fact that the dollar has been weakening. And if the dollar continues to weaken, that would be a tailwind for emerging markets. And we're watching the DXY, the Dixie Index, which is not heavily emerging market currency. It's really very influenced by the euro, but it's close to breaking down. And if it breaks down, it's red. The resistance is down to about 100 on the Dixie. It was as high as 115 at its peak, and it's been flirting with breaking down below 100. If that were to happen, I would think that we would see a further catalyst for emerging market debt outperformance. And the spreads on emerging markets are quite similar to those on high yield bonds. They're not what they used to be a year ago, where they're about 500, but now they're in the middle to low 300s, which sadly, you know, it's nowhere near where we were a year ago. We were in the golden moment of fixed income a year ago. Treasuries were at 5. We had 500 basis point spreads. It was awfully, awfully generous. We haven't seen something that good for quite a while in the bond market. It's not quite as good today. You can't get 10 unless you get extremely risky, but you can still get yields in the sixes, which I think are fairly attractive if you use a mix of mortgage-backed securities and certain credit in the middle part of the capital structure. So we've had a good fixed income year. It started out lousy, but it's turned out to be a better than average fixed income year, better than median fixed income year. You know, we're up over 6% in a lot of our strategies. We'd never thought that would happen when we were contemplating what the year would bring, say back 6 months ago. But it's been good, and with the Fed pivoting, we think we're going to end up with a pretty good fixed income year, probably around an 8% return.
On the topic of commercial real estate, in particular office, there has been a lot of concern post-pandemic, though with rate cuts now underway, there is perhaps an expectation that this could start to put a floor under real estate. So what's your current thinking when it comes to the landscape of commercial real estate across the U.S.?
Yeah, it seems that we're past the worst on the sentiment for commercial real estate. If you look at the CMBS market, of course, there are certain localities and certain buildings, of course, that are hopeless in the market. So it's a very, it's very heterogeneous in terms of the risk and the outlook. But what we've seen is that broadly, the CMBS market seems to have bottomed out. And in spite of a lot of activity supply-wise, there seems to be more demand now than any time, I'd say, in the past couple of years. So we have been very favorable on CMBS since about the end of the first quarter. Clearly, the easy money there has been made. I mean, some of the highest returns in the market are in the CMBS market, and in the bond market are the CMBS market, particularly those that were the most bombed out. And it'll probably be an irregular recovery, but we are overweight CMBS. It depends on what strategy. You know, in some of our strategies, we only stay at the very top of the capital structure, like in the total return strategy. But in more risky types of portfolios, we're pretty comfortable with single A, triple B, CMBS. Of course, underwriting is really, really important. So you need to not be a broad index buyer, but instead you could be a bond picker. The problem is that investors are going to face is that with the Fed cutting interest rates, there's going to be money moving around because there's been so much money comfortably sitting at what was a 5.5% T-bill where there's no state taxes. So if you're in New York or California, it's awfully hard with an inverted yield curve to find something that after tax better than a 5.5% 6-month bill, particularly on a risk-adjusted basis. But with the Fed cutting, we think we're going to see further movement into bonds, particularly intermediate bonds, and that should be supportive of the CMBS market. It should be supportive of the MBS market broadly, and certainly it'll be supportive of corporate investment grade corporate bonds as well. And you don't have to worry about recession so much with corporate bonds. Junk bonds you have to watch out for. I mean, the triple C spread to the double B spread in the junk bond market has been quite wide for a long time. The market is correctly anticipating a default cycle and bottom parts of the credit tiering.
Now, if we turn focus to the U.S. election as we're recording here on Tuesday, September 24th, how might certain outcome scenarios of the U.S. election influence your macro and market outlook?
It seems to me that both candidates have no interest in addressing our fiscal problem. We have the Democrat that wants to give money to low-income people in the form of just government transfer payments. At least that's what the stated policies. They're not very detailed, but that's what they say. And of course, the Republican wants to cut taxes on every niche that you can think of. It's turned into kind of a game almost. No tax on tips. No tax on overtime, no tax on Social Security. So both of these are big deficit expanders, which obviously is going to be problematic in the long term. And I think that's going to be something that if these policies get implemented, whoever wins, it's likely going to lead to further steepening of the yield curve. It's going to lead to concerns about the interest expense and the fiscal trajectory, and it'll lead to further steepening of the yield curve. So my highest conviction idea for the past 6 months, quite frankly, has been that the U.S. yield curve is going to steepen. And so we believe that investors should be underweight at the long end and be more invested in the 3-year, 5-year part of the Treasury curve. And we think that you can keep your duration the same. So you just end up buying more, like using futures. You can actually do it with a little bit of leverage. You can get yourself positioned on that 5-year, 3-year, 2-year part of the yield curve, and that would be likely to continue to reward through the election. Other than that, I think the difference between the candidates has a lot to do with geopolitics, with tariffs, with potential wars. Trump says he's going to end the Ukraine war day one. I mean, I don't know about that one, but I do think that he would get us out of the Ukraine war. And I think that the Democrats seem to be the party of war. And we started two wars under the Biden administration. And so I think there's a difference there. Other than that, I have a hard time coming up with a real differentiation between the candidates. So I'm just viewing it as that this election will probably lead to yield curve steepening further. And that's my primary conviction idea on that topic.
And then on the topic of geopolitics, as we were mentioning before we got started today, the UN General Assembly in progress in New York as we're speaking. What opportunities stand out to you the most around the world, and how are you navigating geopolitical risks when you invest outside of the U.S.?
Well, I've been a very big fan of India. We own Indian bonds in portfolios where that's appropriate. We've been big advocates of the India equity market, and that has nothing to do with geopolitics. It just has to do with demographics and the shifting of manufacturing away from China. Yeah, a lot of that can go to India, and they also have tremendous demographics. So we're big fans of that for both stocks and bonds. We always want to avoid these kind of South American basket case economies like Venezuela and Argentina. We have no investments in those types of areas. We do own mostly Asian, like India, as I said before, bonds and stocks. But we're very concerned, of course, about the Israel situation. You just have to be concerned about that. The Ukraine situation, it seems to be a stalemate, which is just costing us a lot of money. And then, of course, we're worried about Taiwan and China, because as China continues to struggle with perhaps a deflationary impulse, that often leads to aggression. I remember when Russia first invaded Afghanistan back in the 80s, it was a sign of Russian weakness, not Russian strength, and they lash out under those conditions. So we're concerned about that, but we just avoid these hot spots because they're unanalyzable, basically. So we didn't own any Russian bonds or Ukraine bonds or anything like that. Just that situation was heating up, and so we just try to steer clear of those potential problems that we can't really have any control over.
Well, Jeffrey, we have indeed covered a lot of ground in a relatively short span. Before we close out, any final thoughts, takeaways, or anything you would like to reinforce today for our listeners?
My general theme, and this has been the theme for the past year and a half at least, is that portfolios should be rotated towards safety, I think, during this time period. We have a very strong, highly liquid bond market right now. After the summer lull, people came back after Labor Day, and we saw an absolute deluge of supply hit. The corporate bond market had its biggest issuance day of all time on the day after Labor Day. We see massive issuance in CMBS and in corporate bonds generally. So yet all of these bonds are being absorbed. We have seen oversubscription on all of these offerings here in the month of September. Some days it's more powerful than others, but there are no days where it isn't strong. So you get a deluge of bonds, and they'll be 5 times, 6 times, 8 times, sometimes 15 times oversubscribed because there's a lot of demand. So I think it's wise to be rotating, using liquidity to cull out credits that might be of some concern under a potential recessionary environment. And I think investors should be in the intermediate part of the curve at this point in time. I had been favoring floating over fixed rate for the better part of 2 or 3 years. And I changed that back in July at the Fed meeting in July, where I think now you're going to be losing yield at the very short end. The Fed's going to be cutting interest rates. And I think they're going to cut interest rates at least another 150 basis points within the next year. And so you're better off, you know, trying to lock in higher quality credit around the intermediate part of the curve. And that way you're not going to face a reinvestment problem, because it could well be that your 5.5% 6-month bill
might be rolled over at 3%. And so may as well get that 6% or so, if you can find it, for the next 3 years, because you don't want that rollover risk. So that's something that we've been working on for a long time. And the liquidity is quite high right now. So upgrading portfolios the potential recessionary environment seems like the way to manage risk. And that's what we're doing for ourselves and our clients.
Well, Jeffrey, as always, very generous with your time and guidance. It has been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you again for dropping by Market Moves to spend some time with our listeners and our clients, sharing with them your views on a range of market macro, a policy-related topics, and do look forward to our next conversation.
Very much so, yes. I enjoy always, and good luck, everybody. And Bills are 3-0, so let's keep that one going, too.
Absolutely. That was a great win last night. Thank you again, Jeffrey, for your time. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.